It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed of the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Well, this is where I normally would say, good morning, John Graney. However, I'm flying solo today. John, I hope you're feeling better. I hope Liam is too, because you're not here. And quite frankly, I don't want you to share whatever you have. So that's a good thing. I will also say today that the folks sitting across from me, my friends on the other side of the microphone, are much better looking than you are. So I'm glad. Sorry, John, I couldn't resist. You can't defend yourself. So, you know, that's the best time to get you. But anyway, I wanted to introduce them. We're going to be talking a little bit about the market today. And then we'll be touching on women entrepreneurs, women of achievement, I like to say, particularly in the era of small business and a special occasion coming up, the 20th anniversary of the Chef Shop, who has been our underwriter since the beginning of the program, which doesn't seem hardly possible, July of last year. But we always enjoy a good cup of coffee, as Nancy knows. No doubt about that.
Right?
Coffee, popcorn, fudge. I mean, we like it all, whatever it happens to be. So we'll be talking more about that as we go forward. But I'm going to ask each one of them to introduce themselves real quick, and then we'll get on into some of the market issues. Donna, why don't you go first?
Sure. Hi, Larry. I'm Donna Potter, and I am the owner, inventor, and president of a company called Fusion Gates, and we design designer pet and baby gates.
That's a mouthful.
I've been practicing.
Yeah, but they're great. I've seen them. They look wonderful. They work even better. So we'll be talking a lot more about that and how you got into that crazy business here in a little bit. Nancy, you've been with us before. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for letting me come back again.
Absolutely. That's what John and I keep saying. They keep letting us come back, so we do, you know?
Exactly. So I'm Nancy Schneider. My husband and I own the Chef Shop. We've owned the Chef Shop for 11 and a half years, but Chef Shop is celebrating 20 years in business this year. So we're moving into a great month here for the Chef Shop in our celebration.
And I don't know if it's good or bad, but I can actually remember when it opened 20 years ago. As you well know, we know the original owners quite well. So be good to see them back, too.
They'll be here. Joe and Vicki will both be here.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun people. And Lisa, you're new to us.
I am. Hi, my name is Lisa Hudson, and I'm currently supporting the Chef Shop. Nancy is a good friend of mine, a fellow Edwardsville Rotarian, and I actually have entrepreneurship in my family history and personal history as well. Come from four generations of small business, and I'm so excited to just be here supporting today.
Awesome. Well, as you well all know, small business and being an entrepreneur is not for everybody. It's something that some of us fall into it, some of us choose it, some of us, it happens in a lot of different ways, but once you're into it, it's too late to get out. So here we are. We'll talk a little bit more about that. I wanted to touch on a couple of market issues. Something came up I saw coming across a Twitter feed a couple of days ago. As in a prior issue, we were talking about the market indices, the S&P 500, the Dow, the Russell, NASDAQ, the MSCI, and so forth, that they are not necessarily good indicators of what the overall market is doing. And there was a prime example this week. The Dow was down a number of points early in the week, and the news feed said that over 50% of the Dow downside that was in the market was due to one stock. I don't know if anybody can guess what stock that might have been. The Dow includes 30 of the largest companies in the world. There was one stock that was down this week and attributed to over 50% of the loss of the entire Dow index. We all have one.
Would it be Apple?
Ah, she wins.
Yeah.
Hey, Lisa, Apple. Apple stock accounted for over 50% of the total downside loss of the Dow index this week. So what does that tell you?
Buy.
Yeah. Good time to buy. Lady after my own heart. If it's down, buy. If it's up, sell. You know, that's the way it should work. Not generally does, but it's the way it should work. Well, the indicator is I hear a lot of clients tell me, well, the market's up. Why are my accounts only up 5% and the market's up 12%? Well, you have to look at the underlying indices. You have to look at exactly what is up, because many of the changes last year, we talked about that in an earlier show, touch on it quickly again. Many of the changes in terms of the value of the indices last year were produced by companies buying back their own stock. Apple was on a huge buyback. General Electric was on a huge buyback. Many of the oil companies were on huge buybacks. A lot of even the consumer goods were on buybacks. So what that means is they're buying back, they're using cash, because a lot of companies are cash rich today. They're using their own cash to buy back their own stock. And effectively what that does is it runs up the price of the stock. Imagine that. So as they buy it back, the price of the stock goes up, the index goes up. There's really no net gain. Nobody's making any money on that in terms of the overall market. So you have to be really careful of what you're actually looking at, what you're considering, because it may or may not be, shall we say, real. We all talk about fake news today. Pause. We talk about fake news today, and another good example of that was just the other day. They were talking about Google is creating a new algorithm. I don't know if anybody else heard about that. Google is now creating a new algorithm so that when you do a Google search, theoretically, this algorithm will eliminate most, if not all, of the fake news that comes up in your search. Because right now, what comes up and you read may or may not be legitimate news. So it's kind of a sad state of affairs, I think, that we have to have an algorithm to determine whether the news we're actually getting is real or fake. And there are a lot of people out there making fake news and making a ton of money just producing it, coming up with some pretty outrageous headlines and ideas that just don't exist. You know, they just do it, I guess, for the fun of it. Maybe they have a whimsical need to create fantasy in life and get people to believe it. So fake news is certainly an issue. One of the things we've talked about a number of times is state-run retirement plans. We've been talking about that since we actually went on the air back in July of 16. There was, under Obama, there were a number of state-run retirement plans that were designed to go into place. Illinois and California were two of the first states to implement that. And Illinois' law, for those of you who may or may not know that, is still in place. Although the House and the Senate are working on actually, it's not the House and the Senate. Actually, there's a executive order they're working on to eliminate any new states from putting in place state-run retirement plans. And that may prevent others. But in the meantime, Illinois is already set up. It goes into effect June 1 of this year, so 30 days away. And under the Illinois state-run retirement plan, any company who has been in operation for 2 years, has at least 25 employees, and has no employer-based retirement plan, will now be required to enroll all of their employees in the state-run called Secure Choice Participant Retirement Plan. So do you know about that, Nance?
No, but I can't imagine I'd want to put my employees' money with the state of Illinois.
You got that right. Well, we could spend the whole show talking about Illinois, but, you know, we've done that, probably beat that dead horse. But the reality of it is, if your company's been around for 2 years, you have 25 employees, and you don't have a 401k, a SARSEP, you don't have a simple plan of some type, then you are obligated under law to enroll your employees in the state-run plan. It's going to work something like this. You have to automatically enroll your employees in the state-run plan. You will have to begin to deduct 3% of their wage from their paycheck and send it into the Secure Choice plan, unless, more bookkeeping for you, they complete a form and opt out of the automatic enrollment. So they can opt out, but they have to be proactive in terms of obtaining and completing the form. The employers that do not offer their own plan and fail to enroll their employees in the Secure Choice plan will be subject to a $250 fine per employee for each year or a portion of a year in which the employee was neither enrolled in the state plan or their own plan. And on top of that, for each calendar year beginning after the date the penalty had been assessed regarding the employee, $500 for any portion of that calendar year during which the employee continues to not be enrolled in the state-run plan. So unless something changes, any company in the entire state of Illinois with 25 employees in business for at least 2 years, if they don't have a 401k plan, profit sharing, SARSEP, simple, whatever plan that they offer to the employees, and they don't enroll them in the state IRA plan or state-run retirement plan, then they will be subject to a $250 per employee penalty the first year, going to $500 in year two, and so forth and so on. So I have, interestingly enough, you know, we design, install, and administer all types of retirement plans, and I have not heard a lot of companies talking about this. We're down to 30 days, so it means, you know, if a company doesn't have it by the 1st of June, they're automatically going to be subject to that $250 fine per employee. So I hope if there's a lot of people out there, you want to know more about this, you know where to find us, give us a call. It's either lexo@nickelfinancial.com or jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. Check out our website. You can send us an email. Let us know if you're interested in more information on that. If you don't have a plan and you'd like to get one in place by June 1, it's going to be tight, but we can do it. We can get it actually up and running in the 30-day period you have left. So unless something happens legislatively to change that, that's the law as we see it today. Any thoughts about that? Should the state be in the retirement plan business?
Not the state of Illinois.
I don't know if any state should be in the retirement plan business.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. So I don't think you'd have too much trouble getting every single employee to opt out of it. So,
well, and that's the thing. But that's paperwork, you know, more paperwork you as an employer have to do because you have to keep track of them.
That's true.
You know, as soon as you hire them and they come on board, do they want to be in or not? And so it's just government meddling, I think, in our situation, and I don't know that that's ever a good thing. Let's talk about life events. What do you think are some of the most significant life events affecting us today? There's a song, well, Silence is Golden.
Well, I can tell you the main thing that's affecting my life now is because I'm a baby boomer and I'm taking care of elderly parents, and that is a major life changer.
Yeah, the middle place, we call it.
I'm also sandwich generation.
I'm also a baby boomer, and I have the same issues taking care of elderly parents and then, you know, having my first go to college. It's you have, and then throw in a business, you have a tough time deciding where you're going to put your focus. And usually it's all three at the same time.
Well, it is all three. None of them take a backseat to anyone other. I think, you know, having been in the same situation as both of you probably still remember, we had Diane's mom, who's 91, live with us for 5 years, and family takes priority. I mean, a lot of stuff will go by the wayside and suffer when you're trying to take care of them. Unfortunately, mom passed in April, so she's better off. She's not having to suffer the anxiety and difficulties of not diagnosed, but she had Alzheimer's. You know, she definitely had dementia. And she was reached a point where she didn't really know who was who and what was what, and it just wasn't a happy place. So the new survey that was done, life events, they do bring that up. You know, life events can either boost or break financial wellness. That's a term you may or may not have heard, but financial wellness includes us as life in general. Family issues being the baby boomers, being the even Gen X are moving into that sandwich generation where their parents, grandparents, whatever it happens to be, they may be in a position of helping to take care of them or to be a primary caregiver in that situation. And they may have the kids who are going to college, getting married, or part of that boomerang generation that the percentages are pretty substantial. The kids who are moving home for the first, second, or sometimes third time in life. And 68% of parents reported that they're more stressed because of those types of situations. So even taking care of our own finance is not the only thing that relates to our wellness in terms of our financial situation. It all compares to dealing with life in general. Gender gaps certainly lead to higher stress levels. Paying off debt. I find that women are much more reluctant to pay to accrue debt than men are. Men are willing to take on more debt and not as anxious to pay it off as a lot of women, according to the study, will say that anyway. Exercise. Everybody here does, I'm sure, what I do. They plan on exercising a lot and, you know, rarely happens, but it's a good plan anyway. But exercise enters into that financial wellness, believe it or not, that those who exercise are much more inclined to take the time to deal with their finances. It's kind of an interesting phenomena, but they're willing to spend the time to exercise. They're willing to spend the time to do a budget. They're willing to spend the time to put it in writing, the five things we talked about. When anyone wants to reach a high 90% level of success in terms of their financial well-being, is they have to have a plan, they have to put it in writing, they have to have specific time frames and objectives, they have to implement the plan, and they have to monitor it. And you can apply that to any of your businesses. You know, if you have the written plan, you know, your time frames, objectives, you implement and then you monitor, 90% of the time the studies have shown that you will be successful. So we can you can kind of share how that fits into your own personal experience relating to that. What about handling finance when only one spouse retires? Anybody know of someone where the one spouse is retired and the other one is continuing to work?
I don't know anybody like that.
Scott, did you hear that?
Poor Scott. He's officially retired, yeah, and working harder than he's ever worked.
Yeah, I was going to say, he really isn't retired. He just quit one job and started another one.
That's right. He just doesn't get paid for this one.
And as I remind people, Scott was out here at WSIE in the Mass Comm department about the same time I was. I won't say how many years ago that was, but, you know, what can I say? So fond memories of training and being on the board and doing all kinds of fun radio stuff a few years ago. So, yeah, that's another situation. You know,
I like the way you call it a few years.
A few years ago. It's relative. You know, the station's been on the air 46 years. I'll just leave it at that. You know, we won't say that we were some of the first here.
Founding but members.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Thanks, Nance.
Not quite.
No, we were, unfortunately. He was a little behind me, but yeah. I was out here the second year the station was on the air, actually. So, and it's still here, so I didn't do too much damage. A lot of stories related to that. But in the situation where one of the spouses is retiring, the other one isn't, there's some specific issues come into play. Does the spouse who continues to work continue to fund their IRA, 401k plan, or retirement vehicle? The answer generally is yes. Social Security becomes a question. When should either one take Social Security? Because one of the issues is the Social Security looks at your adjusted gross income, so it's the income of both spouses. So if you're taking Social Security, even though one person is taking it before normal retirement age, then their Social Security is going to be significantly reduced because of the total income of the family unit. So there's a lot of factors that go into when you take Social Security, particularly when one spouse is working and the other one isn't, as well as should you allow it to accumulate at the 8% per year until age 70 to build that lifetime income. So again, we could probably spend the entire show and have in the past just talking about Social Security and when do you take it and when do you not. Can clients become millionaires on a normal income? I don't care how you define normal income. Think that's possible anymore today?
I don't know. It'd be pretty tough. If you're not planning, it's really tough.
Without planning, I'd say it's impossible, yeah, pretty much. A couple of quick statistics. A 20-year-old worker today needs to put away $306 every month in order to end up with $1 million at retirement. That's a 20-year-old. My daughter, most of you know, Christy Lexo, didn't exactly know why, but she didn't give her a choice. At age 18, she had to start putting money into retirement. And now she's age 35. Sorry, honey. And it has paid off because she has as much money put away for retirement as a lot of 50-year-olds that I know. If that 20-year-old started and put $306 a month into their retirement account for the rest of their lives, so 45 years, then they'd have $1 million or so. Of course, by then, $1 million isn't going to be enough to retire on. Today, it's close, maybe. But what if that person waited until they were 40? You know, we run into a lot of individuals who, because of family situations, because of the work, because of any type of change that they run into, divorce is a big factor. If they were 40 years old when they started saving for retirement, instead of putting $300 a month away, they'd have to put $1,466 a month away to reach $1 million at age 65. So the earlier you start, the better off you are, not just a little bit. You know, starting at age 20, and that's what I counsel the youngsters in our 401k plans when I go in, and you know, we have 18 to 21, 22-year-olds. How much should they be putting away? They ought to be putting away 15% of their net gross income throughout life. And if they do that, they'll reach their goal. In fact, this article, which I am looking at right now, where the heck did this one come from? It was in one of the advisory magazines, said that clients should start building their nest eggs by increasing their retirement saving to as much as 15%. So I'm glad they agree with me. And raising it, if nothing more, and that's what I tell them. You know, start out where you can. If you only do 4% or 5% or 6%, start there. But every year, bump it by 1% until you get up to 15%. We do have a number of local companies that have what I would consider very rich retirement plan contributions, where if the participant puts in, I can think of one off the top of my head, if the participant puts in 8%, the company puts in 8%. All of a sudden, they're at 16%. They got a real good start towards retirement. So if you don't take advantage of the match that your company is offering, then shame on you, because that's like walking past a $50 bill on the sidewalk and you just don't bother to stop and pick it up, because that's money that you could not make up ever, in addition to the savings in federal and state tax on every dollar that you put away for retirement. So I guess I'll get off my my soapbox for the moment, but probably not very long.
And you're making me feel bad, you know, because I thought that winning the lottery was my ticket to retirement.
That's your plan A, that's right?
That's plan A.
Plan A is the lottery. Interesting statistics. I think it was close to 80% of the people who win the lottery are broke within 10 years.
Wow.
So much for that plan.
Let's go to plan B.
What I think is really sad, just on the point that you were just making, is, I mean, I have lots of nieces and nephews in their 20s, and they are just stressed to the max about student loans. I don't see how they could, I mean, I don't even think they would even consider, you know, putting money away from retirement plan, because they have so much debt. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad. I was in school quite a long time ago, probably the same time as you, Larry, but you know, I feel real sorry for these kids. And I've got, you know, like I said, my first son going into college, and you know, we're trying to keep those loans low, because you know, they've got that experience, and then they have the experience of the baby boomers still working, and there not being as many jobs out there, you know, especially in those larger companies that do match your 401k.
Well, the days of going to school and accruing, you know, what I see people coming out of college with $100,000 to $300,000 in debt, that's a big mistake. I mean, if you're going to be an attorney and you want to be at one of the Fortune 100 companies, you know, yeah, maybe you need to go to Yale or Harvard or wherever. But most attorneys I know do just as well, having gotten their degree from SLU or WashU or SIU or wherever, with a tenth of the debt involved. And I would advise any of those students or family members that you know, if they haven't sat down with a financial planner, they need to do that. And I know they usually say, but we don't have any money to invest. Why do we need to sit down with a planner? But that's the point. You know, you don't know what you have until you sit down with somebody who understands how it works, because a lot of the debt, a lot of the grants out there, there are programs of forgiveness for those debts, if you know what they are and how they work and what to do with them, there are certain companies that you can go work for and they'll pay off the college debt. So, you know, there are things you can do, and it's not always better to pay off debt first. There's a lot of studies, and we can run the numbers statistically and show you analytically that paying off that debt until you're 40 or 45 years old puts you in an impossible situation of ever getting to retirement and being able to enjoy it. Whereas maybe paying it off over a different time frame, maybe refinancing and not going with just the next screen of finance option you get, because a lot of times you refinance and it's on terms that are worse than what you had in the first place, and people just don't understand it. So my word to them is, you know, find a good planner you sit down with, understand what you're doing, what they're doing, and they can help you put that plan together so that you can pay off the debt and you can put some money away for retirement. So let's get to the topic of the day. We want to talk about, we'll start with the Chef Shop. Chef Shop's been underwriting the program, and we thank you, Nancy and Scott, for doing that. I know we've had a lot of fun over the last 9 months or so talking about all the different coffees, and we know for certain, and John, I'll put it out there for you since you're not here, that you're not the most fond of hazelnut. We all know that, John, but you like it.
Caramel. Let's see. No, Highlander Grog, I believe is his.
He loves Highlander Grog.
Yes, Highlander Grog is his.
Highlander Grog, and he's good to go. that keeps him awake. You know, if he's kind of dozing off, I'll give him some of that. But we keep a cabinet full at work of a lot of the different varieties and make those quite regularly as we go through and as we have. And I don't know if I'm going to tell John about the popcorn you brought or not, but you know, if he asks, I might. So we'll see how that works.
See if he listens to the show.
We'll see if he listens. He's going to say, I listened to the show, and I'm going to go, yeah, right. Yeah, not if you didn't ask for popcorn, you didn't. I know how it is. But yeah, tell us about what's coming up. I know a lot of big plans for the 20th anniversary. That's exciting for any business to make 20 years, believe me.
We're excited about our celebration. When you start a new business, making it the first year is over 50% of businesses fail within the first year, mm-hmm. and then over 80% of those fail within the first 5 years. So the chance of surviving as a small business is astronomical.
Slim and none,
yeah. So
you're scaring me, Nancy.
Donna, you're with us. Okay.
We're us. You're good. You're good to go. So, okay. You know, and to think that we've been a part of the community for 20 years is just very humbling to think, because I've talked about this. We're a member of several professional groups, and we've talked about this our communities, and we are so fortunate in the Edwardsville area that the people in the Edwardsville, Glen Carbon, Maryville area, they all support local businesses. It's all about shopping local and ensuring that those businesses are going to be there the next time they come around. So we're very fortunate and very thankful to be in that atmosphere. And that's what our celebration is about. It's about celebrating the fact that we, 20 years after we were Vicki Primrose started the show in the shop in June, 20 years ago. And between her 8.5 years and our 11.5 years, it's a great celebration that we are still in business and we are growing and thriving. And it's all because of the support of the community.
And what dates are going to be parts of the celebration?
Well, we've got pretty much something going on almost every single day this month.
Yeah.
Lisa Hudson's been helping us plan all of that, and she's got a lot on her table right now. Why don't you tell them about what's going on the 27th,
Lisa? Sure. Well, I mean, May is just a fun, busy month anyway, between Mother's Day and graduations, which the shop is always busy with. I think Nurses Day is the 6th of this month, and then Teacher Appreciation Day. So, you know, when in doubt, we say pop local. a little spin on shop local.
Mm-hmm.
But May 27th, really to give back to the community, celebrate, have fun. We've got a big tent planned, a community picnic sort of celebration out in the parking lot, and individuals can come between noon and 3 p.m. that day, and we've got food and music and prizes and the different companies that Nancy and Scott and Vicki have worked with for those 20 years are sending lots of, you know, fun big prizes and things. And I have to brag on Nancy a little bit that, you know, we're talking about this party, but you know, the Chef Shop under Nancy has been so incredible with their giving back and their sense of gratitude and appreciation. And when the management team got together to think about how to celebrate, of course, we can always think of a day or a party, right? Well, they took it not even one step further, 20 steps further. 20 and steps. They're celebrating with 20 acts of kindness around the community. And that has just been the most fun thing to witness, to see the different team members participate in everything from volunteering at the animal shelter to surprising local small businesses with popcorn drop-offs.
Tuesday, we're sharpening knives. Our first responders at the fire station.
And just
can I come?
Yes. You're a first responder, right?
Every time.
Yeah, so these, you know, everyone got together and last week, a lot of the employees, we all got together and wrote cards to kids in hospitals or servicemen and veterans. And again, to foster not only the continuation of that environment within the business, but just constantly show appreciation for what's kept it going. And I think that's one of the coolest things. So it can be about a day, and the party will be incredible. So definitely save the date for Saturday, May 27th, noon to 3. But also, you know, you might see him around town doing something extra sweet.
That is awesome. I was just adding that to my calendar. I will definitely be there on the 27th. And I'm sure John will, and we'll bring the whole gang for sure. But and I'm sure we'll leave with some fudge and popcorn and coffee and whatever else we can snag.
A couple extra pounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question about that.
That's big green egg. Scott would want you to take home a big green egg barbecue.
Oh, he would. I know. He actually, Kathy Parks, I'm going to pick on Kathy. She is a wonderful person with Nickel Investors Corp down in Granite. She's our compliance officer and just an all-around solve all your issues. And her husband bought a big green egg from Scott. And I think he told me, they told me they had gotten a thank you card from Chef Shop. Of course, they spent that kind of money. I'd, you know, figure at least a thank you card. But anyway... But they love it. They've been up multiple times and just enjoy it. But they got that a couple of weeks ago. I guess it was a week or two ago. And took it home and have used it and just enjoy the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. I know everything we get there is wonderful. And I keep telling people, and thanks to the Chef Shop, because it's my go-to place, as Diane knows. If, you know, whether it's Mother's Day or her birthday, which is also coming up in the end of May, I didn't forget there. There is always something at the Chef Shop that I can find that is both useful and something she'll enjoy. And it's not a mixer, believe me. So
yes, I will strongly discourage giving anniversary gifts that have electrical cords.
Yeah. I learned that one.
I thought you meant a cocktail mixer.
Oh, well, that would be fine. Well,
that would work. I could.
You have those too, don't you?
There is one exception.
There is an exception. I like that. I'm gonna steal that, Donna. But yeah, because that's coming up. Let's see. Yeah, this September it'll be 43 years. So I've learned that over the years.
Congratulations.
So yeah, we're looking forward. I don't know what we're going to do at 45, but we'll think of something, I'm sure. But that's coming up. So yeah, it's a great place to shop. Just keep expanding, and pretty soon you're going to have the whole plaza there. You know, we'll just move everybody else out, and you can just move on down. But everybody will need to be there on the 27th. We did get our shipment of cups, which we've been promising, thanks to Scott Jackson over at Casual Tees. They just came in, and we'll be bringing a bunch of those out to the Chef Shop. So for those of you who are listeners and you want to get a travel coffee mug from WSIE 88.7, The Sound, and the Financial Cafe, all you have to do is ask. Isn't that amazing? All you have to do is ask this time, and it really is free. So we'll be having those out there. You can see those, and we'll have some out there for the celebration on the 27th also.
Awesome.
So fun times. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but let's move on to Donna. Donna and I have been together 4 or 5 years, I guess, at the office. She came in
4 years ago.
Yeah, she started this business how long ago?
Well, I came up with the concept of the Pet Gates and Baby Gates probably 10 years ago.
And where'd that come from?
That came from a complete need. Four kids, two very cute but naughty dogs, and a big old house on St. Louis Street. Mm-hmm. And just the need to manage. I had done a home renovation, and actually this was prior to getting the dogs, and somehow in my new home bliss, my kids talked me into getting a dog, my first dog. So I loved the dog, but hated the equipment that came with them. So I had to, I just, naively looked for a beautiful pet gate and couldn't find one. So I had my builder build me one for $600. And I started thinking about the need. And started actually designing something that could be maybe produced first for my friends and family. And then I, really looked into it, and I ended up realizing there was nothing like that on the market. A couple thousand dollars later, I patented it and actually finally started selling it June 2015.
So, a monumental date.
It was. And I have to say, Larry, you were actually a couple plugs for the SBDC here in SIUE. I came to them because I really couldn't work out of my son's bedroom anymore. I was so halfway through the kitchen, and then my son's bedroom had better reception for my computer. And I just really needed to kind of get serious. And I was, starting out, didn't have any money. So I just asked if there was any, free rental space or a office space that I could get for, just somebody who was understanding and wouldn't charge me an arm and a leg. So Larry, which I was so happy about, is a great supporter of small business. And was connected with the Small Business Development Center and really helped me out for those first few years. And he knew and believed in my potential. And now I'm finally paying full rent. But but those first lean years, you really look for people like that to help you out. And I will always be grateful for that, Larry.
Well, you're welcome. We loved having you, and once you got there, we just had to keep you, So, but we, as many people here know, we have kind of a mini incubator on this side of the river, as some people call it, and Pat from the SBDC before he left, and the folks out here in the entrepreneurship group at SIUE keep us in mind and keep us posted on people who need a little helping hand, because we really have all of the resources. We've got, people who know the legal side of the business, people who know the marketing, people who know the insurance, particularly when you're talking about gates that confine dogs, and more importantly, when they confine human babies. The insurance aspect of those types of things is a specialty item, which my daughter was able to help you with. And when you're doing manufacturing, that's a whole different group of insurances that you have to deal with. So we love having startups in the building and to help them grow and reach their full potential as far as the objectives that they've set out. And it's been good, because I think you've been able to talk to a lot of the other people in the building. It's everybody's an entrepreneur and on their own, but you get the opportunity of sharing, successes, failures sometimes, and ideas with all the other people in the building who we have 14 or 15 different businesses within the building, even though it doesn't look like it from the outside. But
I drove by there today, and as I was going by, I was going, I have to ask Larry, how many people they got working there now?
It is a family, though. It really is. And there is, entrepreneurship could be very lonely, extremely lonely. It really does help out to get literally to the water cooler and, you know, discuss. I probably half the people there own dogs. John brings in his dogs, which we love.
And we bring in Christie's.
We just had Jamie just had her baby. She's a lawyer at our in our building, and you know, I love to on the spot focus groups I have in there, and it's been great. Yeah.
I can tell there were a lot of cars in the parking lot, so I decided there was a lot going on there.
That's right.
Yeah, I was making a list yesterday of, well, we have 20 offices in the building. They're all full. And then we have 8 companies who are now doing virtual offices. So we have 4 attorneys, believe it or not, who are doing virtual offices. And we have a marketing person, another advisor, and a few others that just need some place to meet clients or vendors or whoever it happens to be, and a place to have a physical address for receiving things and post office box. So it works out great. We love seeing the people. We love helping out. And anytime you catch me in the kitchen, it's making coffee from the chef shop. So that's okay. Or as John, you know, as John loves to, every time we go in a chef shop, he has to buy fudge. I end up eating most of it, but he buys it and brings it to work. And then it sits there and I'm like, can't let it go to waste. You know, we got to take care of that. So in terms of, and I've seen your gates, and they are really the neatest thing. You know, it's what do you call, I guess, tubular aluminum? I don't know if the phraseology is right, but.
Yeah, it's extruded aluminum.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's lightweight. The panels are made of clear polycarbonate, looks like glass. And what's patented is the interchangeable art screens. So we're having, you know, first of all, you have to love your product or your shop, right?
Right.
Absolutely. to really sell it. And I mean, many times on this journey, I've wanted to give up. But when you have something that you just adore and feel like the world needs it, you know, you really push it. But yeah, I mean, this product is, I guess you can call it the Mercedes-Benz of pet gates, but not with the cost. It doesn't cost that much. It's something that I think there's a lot of people, especially in this location in Edwardsville, that, you know, put a lot of money and pride into their home. And, you know, obviously they have families they want to take care of and they have homes they want to take care of. So this is, you know, it makes sense. It made sense to me when I looked at how big, you know, these ugly pet gates were. And I like to say that it's taking up, you know, quite a bit of square footage, of ugly, you know, in your house, and it's usually between your dining room and your living room. And, you know, why not have, you know, a home accessory that's obviously functional, but look beautiful? You know, we don't have a lot of money to spend on the things that we put in our home, especially with the economy and all. So, you know, I like the idea of, you know, making the most of our purchases. So, yeah, we're pretty excited about it, and we've got some new designs coming up, and it's all good.
So I have a question. So you can switch out the artwork. So
yes.
as you add new pieces of artwork, then I'm assuming you can take something out and put something in.
Yes.
Awesome.
So that there's a screen that goes in the middle of these two pieces of clear polycarbonate, and we are designed. You can put different screens in that have to do with seasonality. So you would have like one for Christmas, one for Halloween.
That's the coolest thing.
Really. And I mean, and honestly, I know many of my friends that live in the area, you know, they are very trendy people and they like to follow trends. So we know the grays are in now, but you know, I just was looking through a Key magazine this morning, and this antique brass is really becoming huge. So, you know, we're going from geometrics to more natural designs and all. So I just try to keep up with that. And, you know, it's exciting and, you know, something that, I don't know, I think there's a lot of home decor that is kind of going in that direction of this customization and flexibility in your design and your products. But it's all consistent with the functionality as well.
And kind of to piggyback on that, I actually read, this is one of my most favorite quotes this morning, the designer today should not help to produce more. He has to help produce fewer and better things. There is a beauty, an aesthetic, and a philosophy in the less.
All right.
And yeah, but
I'm on it.
Yeah, you even touch on, without even talking about it, sustainability, because so much is designed obsolescence, number one, to fail.
That's right.
And consumables and throwaway and packaging. So, you know, there's that whole layer of sustainability that you've really hit on too with that seasonality. You can keep the beautiful, well-designed piece. And so,
yeah, thank
clapping,
you.
Clapping
I agree.
Sound.
I have like a graveyard of strollers and gates in my garage. And, you know, they're not easy to pass on to somebody else. People don't want them, you know. So, yeah, I agree. This is made and built to last. So, cool.
And it serves so many different purposes, you know, certainly as a pet, you know, containment. But for children, now that you've expanded, you know, I know when our daughter was young and we had a pet, you know, we had to do a gate because we were a split foyer. We had to do, you know, put something at the steps, keep everybody from falling down. And it wasn't, you know, it was okay, but it, you know, wasn't anything like what you've got. So
we talked at the beginning about the middle place, and I actually had always thought this, but I am starting to get calls from a lot of caregivers who are taking care of elderly parents that might suffer from Alzheimer's or dementia, mm-hmm. and they're nervous about them falling down the stairs. So you know, they don't want a baby gate or something juvenile in their home. So they are buying these gates, and I think it's a great idea. It is for the top of the stairs as well. We have hardware mounts in there, so. We'd like to keep it nice and safe.
That's funny because that's what I was just thinking. Going, I wonder if that'd keep Mom inside.
Yes, I know. Well, it is. It's
because it's not just so much even going downstairs. It's keeping them in the house.
Right.
Because if they wake up in the middle of the night.
Right. You're never quite sure.
Yeah.
It's true.
Especially with the elderly. I know with Diane's mom, she probably, it would have been tougher to figure out, even as easy as it is to open your gate as it's designed, for someone in that state of mind to figure that out. You know what I mean? So it might be something, that another market for you.
That's right.
You just never know. I know Christy shares with me occasionally frustration being a woman in business owner in dealing with not necessarily only the public, but with vendors. Share some of the things you've run into as a woman, because I'll give you an example. You know, Christy will talk to a contractor, talk to a vendor, talk to whoever it happens to be, and get one answer. And maybe she doesn't like the answer, but, you know, she doesn't know what to do about it. And I'll get on the phone or talk to the person in person. I'll get a different answer. And it's both generational. There's a few years between us, but it's kind of this male-female thing that there's a lot of male people in the marketplace who don't take the women as seriously. Have you found that to be true in your dealings with especially manufacturing overseas and dealing with distributors and shippers and all kinds of people?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if it, I mean, it's definitely, I'll blame some of it on being a woman, mm-hmm. In a mostly male mm-hmm. business like manufacturing, but also I find it as an entrepreneur, especially when I was first starting out, I feel like there are a lot of situations where people make a lot of money off of our how naive we are, mm-hmm. and then also how you know, sometimes when you're first starting out, you're just blind. You're almost obsessed. And I like to say that, you know, it was like having an affair when I was first starting out. You know, you're obsessed with wanting this idea to work, wanting this business to work. And I have definitely ran into companies that have tried to sell me, you know, software that's going to, you know, answer my dreams of building a, you know, all-inclusive website. My first manufacturer, I came, you know, click-clocking down the halls in my high heels and my 1990 suit that I got out of the closet. And I had asked them, I sat down and I had these drawings that I did at the kitchen table, and I'm like, oh, can you build this? Oh, sure, we can build this. Well, I'd like to meet with your engineer, I say. And they said, lady, we don't have an engineer. This is a dog gate, you know? And it turns out, like 5-6 years later, that was the ticket. That is what exactly what I needed. I needed an engineer who would actually listen to me and, you know, and listen to me and what I thought my clients or my customers wanted. And he engineered every component to that gate. As a matter of fact, that's one of the big things I learned is, you know, again, being naive in manufacturing, you think that, you know, you don't need to know all the nuts and bolts, literally the nuts and bolts of mm-hmm. your product. And it wasn't until I learned the nuts and bolts and the material and everything that needs to be used that I really started making headway, and I built the product that what I would expect as a consumer that would be worthy of the idea and the cost.
How about you, Nance?
Well, I've always said that you can, as a businesswoman, you have to go about things differently than you would if you were a man. That's just the way it is.
It's a reality.
It's a reality. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, the same sentence could come out of my mouth as come out of some, out of a man's mouth, mm-hmm. and it's taken completely different. So you do have to learn to talk to people differently and still figure out how you can get that person to do or persuade them to do what you need them to do. There are definitely challenges, for sure, on every aspect, for being a woman entrepreneur. It's the same way as when you take your car in to get it worked on. You can tell them there's something wrong with your car, and they're not going to believe you unless they can witness it, because you're a woman and you don't really know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there's a lot of advantage to being a woman entrepreneur too. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes because you're more intuitive, you can see opportunities that a man might just not even recognize as that being an opportunity for expansion or growth or a new avenue of revenue. And so I think the fact that as women, we're more intuitive, I think that is huge for being an entrepreneur.
Particularly if you're your target market is women.
Yes.
I mean, I find that I go to these trade shows and all of the pet gate companies, the baby gate companies, there's just men, you know, and I find that very funny, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely could relate more. Yeah.
Well, it can be a disadvantage because, again, Christy shares with me dealing with contractors or banks, even, in acquiring the agency she just bought. I should stop with some of my generalizations. Many bankers don't view women as good business people. I know it's a very broad statement, but we dealt with several banks. We ended up working with 5 different ones, frankly, before we found one who was serious about working with us. But they didn't want to take it seriously that, you know, she's this 35-year-old, was going to take over an agency that's been around 35 years with thousands of clients and being able to run it. And so they were more concerned about, where's the guarantees? Well, you don't get a lot of guarantees in business. You know, you can put your life savings and you can put your hard work and sweat and effort into it. And some things you're going to have to go right. And then sometimes they don't always. But nevertheless, we found a local bank, and we'll talk about them another time, who was willing to work with us on it. And they, respected Christy and what she's doing and how she's doing it. And we got the deal done. And it was something when we first got into it, I think she kind of scratched her head and said, this will never happen. You know, so it was one of those. But it came about, took, 7 or 8 months of negotiation and putting the deal in place. And the fact that she was integrally involved in the construction of our building when we did that back in 2005-06. She was in all the construction meetings and design meetings, and she and Diane, along with our interior designer, made all the decisions on colors and, you know, location and whatnot. So I take no credit for any of that. But as any of you who've been in it have seen, it's worked out great. So there are challenges out there, but they can be overcome.
Well, and I think too, the business world in general, we all just need a little bit more practice, because it hasn't, you know, if we think of it as growing pains, it's a form of communication that males and females haven't practiced together. Mm-hmm. For that many years, so to speak, in the history of history. And so we're all practicing towards, you know, a new shift and maybe a new paradigm in what business looks like. And don't quote me on this, but I think women make something like 80%, either influence or make 80% of all financial decisions within a home and a family. So like you said, as that, we're just all learning to speak each other's language, and they're definitely benefits to being a woman. And as you mentioned, finding the right people to work with. And there are people that are on the leading edge of that communication and collaboration, and finding those people is key. And so we're all coming together towards a really cool new standard in business. And I think that definitely levels the playing field, so to speak, so we can have some fun and incredible evolution in business.
Well, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, quite generally speaking, women are a lot smarter than men.
We all three would agree.
Yeah, I didn't figure I'd get too much. I get too much pushback on that one, but I really mean that, because in dealing not only with my daughter but my wife and others in the building, it's kind of interesting. In our particular building, out of all of the offices, what we have, Donna, we have 1, 2, 3 of us are male.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're
the
right.
Other 17 or not. So what does that tell you? But we find it's a very collaborative effort in helping one another, answering questions. And you, Lisa, you're absolutely right. 80% of the financial decisions made today in a household and in a lot of businesses are made by women. And I think the education of that, women in investing programs, being involved, the women generally being involved intimately in their own financial situation, whether it's, you know, when a will is made, a trust, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, managing a business, transitioning a business. You know, Christy had never been involved in an asset purchase before. I have many times, so it was easy to help guide her and point her in the right direction and, you know, do this, don't do that, and here's why, and so forth. So I think we're able to offer that expertise to help them grow. And that's part of why I'm here. That's part of why we work with the clients we do. And I think it's paramount that the women are as involved, if not more so, in their own personal finance than the men, because quite frankly, you're going to outlive most of us. So statistically speaking, you know, mortality says that those 65-year-olds today, you know, they stay in a 50-50 chance of reaching mid-80s, and the women are probably, you know, better chance of reaching early to mid-90s. So when you consider if you're retiring at age 60 or 65 and you got another 30 years of living to do with some knowns and many unknowns, you better be prepared for it, because there are concerns out there that we have to deal with that you just can't address in all situations. So believe it or not, as John says, we're out of time already. Sorry, John. But we are close to being out of time already. So let's touch base once more. What would you, what recommendation, advice would you give to the young female entrepreneur, Donna, in, you know, with their own idea?
Be prepared for the long haul, I would say. You know, I mean, I think the best I've got out of this so far is just confidence. You know, I mean, I'm lucky to have, you know, I do have a husband who has a job and insurance and all that stuff. So that's been very, you know, really nice. But most importantly, he's been supportive, you know, really supportive of the idea.
But I've grown so much, mm-hmm. and I think it is, you don't have to spend a lot of money, and it's worth it. It's worth the journey. And I think when we were talking just a bit ago, you know, you don't, you have a great idea, but you don't have the confidence for it. And the only thing you can do is, you know, take one step forward and then take the next step and the next step. And then you might trip, but that's okay. Take the next step and the next step. And all of a sudden you're running, you're in your stride, and you still trip every once in a while. But, you know, you are getting stronger mm-hmm. and more confident. And I think, you know, your business is going, it really can't go wrong if you stay focused and on the right track.
Well, it just speaks to the fact that, you know, without failure, there are no successes. Because if you're not failing, you're not doing anything. And if you're not doing anything, you're not going to succeed. I'm a very firm believer in that. And
they say there's good days and there's grow days.
There are grow days.
Yeah.
I like that. You told me that the other day. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I have a lot of grow days.
I have
a
lot of grow days.
Nancy, Lisa, how about you? What advice would you give to the young entrepreneur?
Oh, man. My...
No pressure.
No. Well, my greatest investment is in people and community. Again, that team around you, whether they're, you know, the people that can help you in literal ways, like a banker or attorney or things like that. But just talking to people, getting the community behind whatever you want to do and reinvesting in those people and their ideas, this round table sort of people around you that are doing their own thing and hearing about them. I love coming together in co-creation or support. So the people around you and massive imperfect action. And I did not coin that. Someone else did. And that just that willingness to do something that's the next best thing, not meaning second best, but what's the next thing you can do that's the best thing you can do towards what you want to do, and that's enough.
You may often call it intuition, which I do believe in intuition. I call it gut. You know, the only time most of the time when I fail is because I don't follow my gut. You know, mm-hmm. it's always been right,
no,
and if I just learn to follow it every time, I wouldn't make any mistakes, but you know, we know that's not going to happen. So
we like learning.
Well, my suggestion to anyone who wants to become has an idea, and they don't know where to start, look in the community around you, because there are hundreds, just in Edwardsville, hundreds and hundreds of small business owners, and they're all willing to help you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it's to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you and listen to your idea and point you into some directions. So if you know someone in business who you think, oh my gosh, I wonder, that's sort of like what I want to do, but not really. I wonder what they think of, you know, or where can I go, or where can I reach out for, ask, talk, connect.
Great advice. We will see everybody at the Chef Shop on the 27th of May. And it starts at what time?
Noon to 3 p.m.
Noon to 3 p.m. I'll probably come early.
Good.
But at least, yeah, noon to 3 p.m. on the 27th. Thanks to Nancy. Thanks to Scott and the Chef Shop for underwriting the show. Thanks to WSIE-FM, Steve Jankowski, Executive Director, and Daryl, our engineer. Where would we be without engineers, right? But thanks for giving us the opportunity to share some financial ideas, some advice, hopefully raise some questions, maybe answer a few along the way as we produce the Financial Cafe. See us online at www.thefinancialcafe.us. All of our shows are out there in blog form. So if you want to hear one again, go out, pick it up, download it, listen to it, and keep an eye open for, yeah, you got to put that on your website, Nancy. so they can tag over to the Financial Cafe. Questions, just send those to us. So anyway, signing off for the Financial Cafe, I'm Larry Lexo, and John should be back with us next week with a little help. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.